If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast by two guys who remain embarrassed to have a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. I might even say that my shame grows from episode to episode.
Yeah, well, it has been a bit of a slog, but I think we're starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. In terms of the quality of the writing and execution.
I thought you were talking about our podcast, which...
Oh, you mean just that it's almost over?
Yeah, I think we're almost done with the series. And you know what Malcolm Gladwell says? I mean, you get 4 episodes of a podcast done. I think you've achieved mastery
right
in the podcast realm. So feeling pretty good.
We're trying to have these be like between 30 and 35 minutes each, and... But we record about 2,500 hours
sure
per episode and then cut it down to the best, 30 minutes. So, I mean, by episode 4, that'll be 10,000.
Anyone who stuck around with us to episode 4 knows that all the content in every episode has been the best of the best.
Mm-hmm. Just been top shelf.
Just top shelf dick jokes.
Well, shall we start talking about Season 1, Episode 4, The Last Outpost?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Not really getting any better, I don't think.
The episode starts and the Enterprise is chugging along in space in pursuit of a Ferengi vessel that has stolen some kind of equipment from a Federation outpost. And I think that in episode 1, they actually talk about the Ferengi, but it seems pretty clear to me that they hadn't kind of decided what the Ferengi were going to be at that point.
Yeah, their reputation sounds real scary, which is laughable once you realize who and what they are down the road.
Yeah. So there's some talk on the bridge of what the Ferengi are going to be, and they compare them to Yankee traitors, which...
Yeah, at no point did they speculate that their heads look like the back of elephants.
It's a big reveal, and when they do finally catch up with this Ferengi vessel, the ship fires on them. It does do the e-brake maneuver that you talked about in the last it wasn't quite as exciting as I remembered.
They showed them the pointy end of the ship,
yeah,
which
right
is the better end for sure.
It does look like a cool ship to be in, because like if you're in that back section just like with a window looking out toward the front, I feel like that'd be a pretty cool view. Looks like a pretty big ship, you know?
It kind of looked to me like the bridge of the Enterprise. Like if you took that general shape,
oh yeah,
and turned it into a ship and maybe stuck a fork to the front of it.
Maybe the model team got a little drunk and had to scramble at the last minute. So I suppose the Ferengi ship fires upon them and shit gets pretty tense, and then they start to have power drains all over the ship, and they're convinced that the Ferengi have some sort of ability to suck the power out of their ship that they're unaware of. And they had gone in thinking that the Ferengi were similar technology level to the Federation, but now they're worried that they might be far more advanced.
Yeah, and Worf just wants to destroy him immediately. It seems like he knows more about them than he's saying, but at no point does he say anything useful about what he might know about the Ferengi, which is weird.
So they finally get this Ferengi daemon on screen, and I actually really like the scenes where Picard is talking with this character, because they shot it in this pretty crazy way where they'll shoot like from behind Picard and have the view screen fill the entire frame. So mm-hmm. you have this like crazy, crazy close up of the daemon in a way that like it's like not a shot that you see very often, and it makes him really menacing and scary.
You really get into every fold.
No, yeah. The high definition has not been so kind to the earlier makeup work in this series. So anyways, they realize based on something that the daemon says that the Ferengi are not in fact behind this power drain. And so they go into the observation lounge where they have a 3D hologram projector on the table, and they discover that there's like lightning beams hitting both ships from the planet's surface, and there's something down on the planet that is causing the power drain. So they go back on the FaceTime with the Ferengi and talk them into a joint.
You up?
new phone. Who dis? Which is a surprising choice, because you know they've been pursuing these Ferengi for being thieves, and now they're going to do a joint mission of exploration on the planet's surface to see what's causing this power drain. I guess they don't really have a choice.
You skipped over the fact that Picard surrendered to them, which is the second time he surrendered to a foe in 4 episodes.
They really want to establish his character as being French, you know?
Well, it's clearly frustrating to the rest of the crew. Who,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, Picard has seemed to surround himself with bloodthirsty, warmongering bridge crew that he just frustrates at every turn with his surrenders.
They might be the most bloodthirsty, warmongering people from their utopian post-scarcity society.
Yeah, yeah. Two war fiends and a sex addict compliment him on the bridge. That's a tough break for Picard.
But so they beam down, and something on the planet's surface has caused the transporter beams to scramble them all over the planet's surface. So Riker finds himself totally alone on the surface of the planet, and there's this very weird scene where he like goes out onto a cliff and yells,
"Anybody!"
He then just turns and walks away from the cliff and finds everybody in the other direction.
Like he basically does that thing where he screams into a thunderstorm. Also, major props to the set dressing department breaking out the dry ice in a real big time way.
Totally. I think it's the first kind of primitive or undeveloped planet surface that we see in the whole series. So this is the unveiling of the like styrofoam rocks and and very close up psych that become kind of watchwords of exterior set design in Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Later on, they go to like that establishing shot mat, you know, that wide angle mat, and they couldn't do that in this case for whatever reason. They wanted to shoot those crystal cactuses up close.
Yeah. So, the planet surface is, they start kind of finding each other. It's Yar, Geordi, Riker, and Data. Is Worf there too?
Yeah, he is. It's sort of like the A-team of away teams. Like, that's who you want if you're playing fantasy away team, I think. Those are the
A-team of away teams is a good name for this episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the surface is covered in these crazy crystal structures, and the crystals are the reason that energy is being dissipated and absorbed by the planet when the Ferengi away team starts attacking them by flinging lightning bolts out of these crazy blue whips.
Yeah, if there's one like style of weapon that you want, you know, for aiming at someone far away, you definitely want its method of discharge to be like whipping it around your head and sort of snapping it across yourself.
Yeah.
Super accurate from the 50 yards that they were shooting them.
Well, maybe on Ferenginar they train them from youths, you know? You're learning your rules of acquisition and you're learning your whip skizzles. I will say I really like some of these early episodes for just kind of like trying anything standpoint.
Yeah, like they finally got weird with what an alien looks like, and they got weird with what an alien weapon might be. Like it's not your standard issue like Dustbuster phaser like they bring down to the surface. Like they actually got creative.
Yeah, like there's the Dustbuster phaser, and then there's also the like key fob phaser.
Yeah.
That sort of looks like the garage door opener version. and I don't know, like I guess like Yar always has like the bigger ones, but Riker I feel like we've seen a couple times now with the little key fob one, which I feel like is a great if you could actually get a beam weapon that small, like that's what you want, right? Because you could like keister that and smuggle it into an alien prison.
I think it's weird, like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but no one has ever gone John Woo with a phaser and gone like one in each hand, right?
I was totally thinking about that in this episode. Like, it would be pretty awesome to just be like, anyways, when they start shooting at each other, the crystals really start absorbing these energy bolts, and it awakens Portal 63, it's like a cloud of energy at first, and then it sort of like coalesces into a humanoid, and
clearly related to Gozer the Gazorian from the Ghostbusters universe.
Yeah, it might be the love child of Gozer the Gazorian and Tim from the Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail.
Yep.
So he is some sort of representative of the Takan Empire, a very powerful star empire that disappeared millennia ago because of a supernova. And he's sort of like, you know, Japanese soldiers stationed on islands in the Pacific, unaware that the war is over and unaware that the Takan Empire no longer exists. So he sort of thinks he's in position to pass judgment on current spacefaring species, and they're trying really hard to make him understand that he has no idea what the fuck he's talking about.
So we're four episodes into what should be a hit science fiction series. So this awesome ship is going to be flying around. It's the peak of human technology and exploration. But basically, we're just going to fly around being judged. We're not going to get into too many adventures. We're just going to meet people who judge us.
Pass a lot of judgment.
It's sort of like the George Lucas philosophy of the Star Wars prequels. Like, let's take the coolest part about science fiction and just ignore it completely.
My love is a creeper, longing still for that which longer nurses the disease.
The basic allegation that's being leveled against both the Ferengi and the Federation is that they're, you know, savage barbarians. And the way Riker convinces the Portal Guardian character that they are not is by quoting a few lines from Sun Tzu, from The Art of War, which is a surprising choice, I guess. But
the Portal's impressed by Sun Tzu the way any high school student is the first time they read it, and becomes immediately insufferable by talking about it nonstop.
Yeah. Well, let's just be glad that he quoted Sun Tzu and not Ayn Rand, right?
Right. Yeah. I'm sure that idea was floated in the writer's room.
So the Portal offers them the opportunity to destroy the Ferengi, but Riker declines, saying that if the Ferengi are destroyed, they would learn nothing. So
benevolent, that William Riker. He shows grace and sympathy in a way that he doesn't usually show it in the bedroom, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think he sort of treats the Ferengi like men that have no chance in like operating in the same league sexually as he does.
Right, right. Yeah, you can see that.
Yeah, kind of big brothery, kind of, you know, like, aw, those guys are cute.
There's also, like, there's all this stuff going on the planet's surface, but there's also the B story up on the ship where things have gotten real cold.
Right. Yeah. The all of the life support stuff is failing. And, you know, there's a weird moment where I think Troy is walking around with the thermal blanket and she just gives it to somebody else and then is super cold after that. And it's like, why don't you guys just have more? Like, the second power started draining, you should have just replicated 1,000 thermal blankets and you'd have plenty.
I was really disappointed by the blankets. Like, it seems like modern emergency blanket technology is far better. Like, where's the foil? There's no foil.
Yeah, it should have been foil. Yeah. Should have been astronaut-y.
This was another great scene where Beverly refers to Wes as her son when talking to Picard. Like, just to make that clear again, Captain, Wes is my son. And she actually proposes sedating him so that, I guess, like, she can put her son down the way she would put down a beloved pet so he wouldn't suffer. And Picard's reaction to this is so great. Like, Picard doesn't want her to give him sedatives, and I think we both know that it's because, like, his tolerance is so great from all the sedatives that Picard himself has given Wesley. Like, I think the secret's out at that point. So he strongly discourages his mother from sedating him.
Don't roofie me, bro. The away team beams back up and power comes back to the ship. Everybody sort of wakes up. I guess they were really like right on the verge of losing their lives.
Everyone's all slumped over their station.
Yeah.
It's real dark.
Yeah.
Beverly goes to the bridge and sits next to the captain, which I thought was another interesting choice by her. I mean, four episodes, she is just throwing herself at him, and he is just not getting it. Not getting it at all.
Maybe, Captain, we could stay close for warmth. The day is saved, and Riker suggests that they beam a box of Chinese finger traps to the Ferengi as a ironic thank you for, I guess, not killing them.
And Data is, like, continuously stuck in them, right?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the smartest invention in all of the universe. He can't get himself out of a finger cuffs.
They really picked the wrong character for that.
The second episode is where he bangs Yar, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Maybe he needs to stop sticking himself into things he doesn't understand.
Hey.
Yarmok, Angelad, Tanagra.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
I think this episode is solid up until the judgment scene. Like when the portal appears, it's where it takes that left turn into being bad. But you know, like I think we should give credit to like the first portion for not being completely insane. Like,
it sounds like I hate the show, but I really don't. Like, we should probably this might be a good time to like full stop and just say, like, we both still really love this show. There's just a lot to make fun of.
Especially in S1. A lot to make fun of. But I will say, like, this is a much better episode than the three that have come before it, in my opinion. Low bar to clear, but I think it's starts to hint at some of the potential of the series. I think that we talked a little bit in the last episode that we have misgivings about the design of the Ferengi as being pretty explicitly anti-Semitic.
They're anti-Semitic, but they also communicate in a, like, they sort of hop around and flail.
Yeah, all of their body language is really insanely, like, conniving and
it's like the only thing they know about humans is from watching West Side Story.
At one point, one of them steals Riker's comm badge, and there's like an extended shot of its creepy little fingers, like,
right,
hovering and gripping on this metal badge, and it's like, it's so gross, and it's hard to imagine that the design of the characters got approved the way it did. You know, this is a race that winds up being like pretty seminal in the rest of the series and in the subsequent series. I mean, one of the actors playing the Ferengi winds up being a main cast character on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, interesting choice. You know, like, if you're going to buy stock in any character at this point for the long term, like,
yeah,
can't see yourself buying that one.
Yeah, it's very strange. Do you have a drunk Shimoda for this ep?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
The only thing I wrote down as a possibility was the portal character, because he's just so ridiculous.
You know, I think my drunk Shimoda might be Tasha Yar, who you may remember, like, she gets, you know, like, what a Quentin Tarantino-style, like, Mexican standoff is. It's when, like, everyone with a gun has a gun on someone else, so it's like,
right,
mutually assured destruction. So they're down there and everyone's all quarreling, and then Tasha Yar pops out from behind a crystal cactus with it's just her and a single phaser, and three of the Ferengi have three of their whip phasers, and she gets into, like, basically a Polish standoff with them. Like, it's one versus three, and the Ferengi are super scared of Tasha Yar, both because she's a clothed woman and evidently her one phaser is enough to overcome their combined power. I thought that, to me, seemed like a pretty drunk display of confidence. And so I think for that reason, Tashi Yar gets my vote for drunk Shimoda.
That's pretty good. That also, we should mention, in addition to being disgusting capitalists, the Ferengi are also raging misogynists.
Every alien really likes Tashi Yar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, an episode has not really gone by without somebody making an inappropriate sexual comment about her. So
it only makes, like, and, you know, spoiler alert for exactly no one, but, like, but they build up the sex icon of the show, the female sex icon. I think we both agree that Riker is the male equivalent of that. But they build Tashi Yar up into being this, like, female sex icon, and then they kill her at the end of the season.
Yeah. Like, I think they kill her mid-season.
Oh, really? Is that coming up?
It's coming up not that far, not that long from now.
Interesting.
I would guess choice. We have 10 weeks before Yar is gone.
Well, we better enjoy her while she lasts.
I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel. I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
So the next episode is called Where No One Has Gone Before. So the Enterprise is ordered to undergo a series of tests that will propel the ship at unfathomable speed, but Riker has misgivings surrounding the equations and theories presented by their arrogant designer. Only Wesley puts together that the designer's assistant is the one behind the whole scheme of things.
Oh, good. It's a Wesley-based episode.
What do you remember about this?
I remember that it's some more great head and face makeup. For an alien, basically,
yeah,
we're just
they had
to
a bucket of silly putty and just say roll your face back and forth.
Yeah, I remember actually liking this one. I thought this episode was a good expression of just the possibilities of the show being, you know, instead of being trapped on a planet or being judged by someone. The reception was mixed, I guess you could say, which a mixed reception review would be far and away better than the
kind of an improvement
to any other episode we've watched. It got away with some things that would have killed other shows stone dead. That's encouraging. It works, if only because it tickles the part of you that wonders exactly what might be out there. I like that part, being tickled.
Well, as a little teaser for next week's episode, this next week's episode might be the episode where I tell you something really embarrassing about myself with regard to Wesley Crusher.
Oh, wow. I'm excited to hear it. You mean Wesley Crusher, who is described as being a cloying geek that you just want to strangle, according to this review?
Yeah, that sounds like we're talking about the same guy. Hopefully there'll be an episode at some point in the future where we really definitively find out whether or not Picard is pursuing an abusive sexual relationship with Wesley Crusher.
I hope we never find out the answer, because the speculation is so entertaining.
Well, I think that's probably about all I can stomach for one day.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Thanks for everybody that's been writing reviews about the show on iTunes and tweeting about it. I know your hearts are in the right place, but we really are embarrassed about this podcast, so please stop.
Yeah, quit trying to say that it's all right and that you somehow share in our geekery. That doesn't make it any better.
Yeah, but, you know, as Adam coined on Twitter, subscribe and delete.
Yeah.
With that, I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica.
Peace and long life.
See you next time, I guess. We really staggered to the finish line there.
Yeah. I guess we sort of need to have like a signature sign off figured out at some point.
We do. I feel like it's going to reveal itself to us, and maybe it hasn't yet.